המידע, מרכז האודיו של אוניברסיטת רייכמן.
מדברים עליה, מדברים עליה.
מדברים עליה, יעל דיפורטו מארחת עולים חדשים שהופכים לישראלים.
Hi everyone, I'm Yael Di Porto and I'm the host of Medabrim Aliyah. I made the Aliyah almost 10 years ago, that's crazy for me, like crazy, from Italy. And now I have this podcast in which I talk to other Olims about making Aliyah and our experiences. So today with me, I have a friend from class, from the Public Diplomacy program, Hoffman. Jonah Hoffman. I love the name Jonah, by the way. Really good name. He's 20 years old. He's from Seattle. He made Aliyah this past December. Mm-hmm. 25 of December on Christmas Day.
Reborn.
He's a government student, a Reichman, and he does online Hasbara and Jewish advocacy. About Israel, he likes the amount of kosher food you can find here. That's, you know, maybe one of the best things. Has kosher food. And the things he doesn't love about Israel is the clubbing culture and, you know, parties and stuff. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, actually. I'm not a big fan of that.
You're the first one to really agree with me on this one. Usually when I tell people, they're like, wait, what? You just haven't gone to the right place. Try this place. Hard pass. No thanks.
Maybe because we are just not parties people. Sometimes there are people that like other things in life.
That's right. It's also expensive. I know. Tickets are expensive.
Also, I never saw, like, to get in, you have to pay. It's also in America? No.
In America, there's not, clubbing isn't as much of a thing in America.
Okay.
In America, it's a lot more like you go to a bar with some friends. The bars usually have a dance floor or a karaoke thing going on, so you're able to stand there and sing and dance with your friends. But bars are just free to go into. You don't really have to pay to go into a bar, so having to pay for tickets to go into like a club or a bar here is totally new to me.
Crazy. Okay, let's start with the question. First of all, what made you decide to make Aliyah now, like at 20 years old? Mm-hmm. You're young.
So I've actually been in Israel since I've been technically 16, but we'll say 17.
What? Okay.
Yeah. My family's always been very Zionist. You know, it's always been, Israel's always been the end game. You're going to end up here one way or another. Might as well be sooner rather than later. And I'm the first member of my family on my mom's side and my dad's side, at least, to make Aliyah, to be the first one to actually start living here full time. The rest of the family, my grandparents bought an apartment here a few years ago, and they switch off a few months at a time, Israel and Seattle. It's in Yerushalayim. It's a great location. Love going there for whenever they visit for Shabbat. But we've always been a very Zionist family. So I figured, hey, might as well make Aliyah to Israel. So when I came for my yeshiva gap year program, I decided during that year, okay, we'll make the final decision this year. Oh, turns out I love it here. So after that, I came to Reichman, started studying here when I was freshly 18. My birthday's October 7th, which isn't great these days. Yeah. So I'm going to try and get that changed, but we'll see how that goes. And since then, I've just fallen in love with the country, and I waited till this past summer to start my Aliyah process. That way, once I finish university, I can draft to the army.
Wow. Okay. Well, you were really young, like 16, 17. But your family, like, they're just Jewish. They are not Israeli. You don't have Israeli roots or...
No. I mean, the closest thing really is my great-grandmother. I was actually, and her parents lived here when it was still the Palestinian mandate under the British and a little bit of the Ottomans before, but mostly during the British. And they left after the riots in 1929.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Interesting. And, so you're from Seattle. What's the biggest cultural difference you have noticed between there and here?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can start with, like, a similarity. Okay. Israelis and, I'll say, Seattleites or people from Seattle, not necessarily the rest of the states, love coffee. There's the big commonality. I know in Italy also coffee is a big thing. We invented Starbucks, after all, in Seattle.
Really? Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay, our, the HQ is in Seattle, and Starbucks, I live and die by Starbucks. So that's a big thing, so the shared coffee thing. But in terms of differences, Seattleites are very sort of a fake polite almost, whereas Israelis will tell you directly to your face if they like you or not, if they think your idea is stupid or not, if they think your t-shirt is dumb or not, right? They'll tell you directly. A Seattle person will go, oh, like if they don't like your shirt, let's say, oh, that's nice. it's a very fake politeness. And there's also something called a Seattle freeze, which I've never seen anywhere else, where it's you'll be standing in line to buy a coffee or buy a bagel, whatever it may be, and you make friends with a person, just stand there chit-chatting, talking, whatever, and you start talking for a while, and then you exchange information maybe, or maybe you don't. You say, oh, I'll talk to you later. Never get to talk to them again.
But that's, you know what? That's a nice thing, because nowadays, let's be honest, it's everything on social media, also meeting up with people, like dating apps and whatever. When you start talking with a person like face-to-face, that's something that never happens anymore. So that's nice of Americans.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to the entirety of America. Yes, I know some places on the East Coast, not to throw shade, but definitely to throw shade, aren't nearly as polite, but we try and be polite. And we also, another commonality I will say, is we do love hiking also. I know Israelis love to hike. They love going on Tiulim, wherever in the country they want to go. Seattleites do the same thing, although we have more trees.
And you know what? Also, because Israel is very influenced by America. Let's, like, for the amount of Americans that live here now, and also for the culture in general.
Very much so.
Also, it's interesting because Starbucks didn't work here.
Yeah, I remember they failed like 20 years ago, kind of, because the local coffee game is so strong. And now we have Israeli Starbucks, aka Aroma.
Yeah, that's not the same, let's be honest.
But it's not quite the same.
Maybe in the future we'll be back. Who knows?
One day, I pray.
Maybe in Glilot, you know, the new shopping mall they opened? This is very...
It's very nice there, actually. Yes. I went today.
Yeah. Ah, really?
Yeah.
It's very cool vibe. It's very, you know, America or Europe.
I felt like I was in, like, LA or something like that.
It's very nice. They're trying to be international. Let's see. Okay, so it's been less than 6 months since you made Aliyah. How has the adjustment been so far? Any, I don't know, surprises, experiences, something?
So it's definitely not as much of an adjustment as somebody who made Aliyah. Their first time in Israel was making Aliyah, or they had only done their bar mitzvah trip or something like that. Whereas since I've been here for so long, the adjustment was kind of, oh, I guess I have my Tudat Zehut, which I can use when I want discounts in places for a first-time thing or whatever it may be. Or the adjustment was really just getting used to actually being an Israeli citizen. You know, the health insurance stuff is just so much fun to deal with, and the bureaucracy and cutting through all the red tape. And it's, you know, they could joke about, oh, for Valentine's Day, find somebody who will go through Israeli bureaucracy for you, right? That's true love right there. So just getting used to doing that, all of that as a citizen rather than just somebody here on a student visa was probably my biggest adjustment.
It's easier to be an Israeli, like the people treat you differently when they know you're Israeli or not?
Less so, because when I do speak Hebrew, my very bad Hebrew, when I do speak, I still have a very American accent. So they end up going, no, I speak English. And I'm like, but I want to practice. That's why I'm trying to speak Hebrew to you.
They do this to me all the time. And my Hebrew, I think it's pretty good, 10 years.
I've heard your Hebrew. It's fantastic.
Thank you. But they still, when I say sometimes someone tells me something, I mean, also it can be that I don't understand the full sentence, like every word, but they understand the context or the situation, but they say, I don't know what, or like mama, so they switch to English. It's not that I didn't understand what you said, I didn't hear you. I'm deaf,
right? So
but okay, maybe because also they want to speak
English, maybe English. They're trying to practice their own English. And to that, I say, that's amazing. Do you want to take a trip to the States? I'll help you practice over there. I really want to practice mine here. We can trade off, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Do English classes, get paid for it. You know, it could be a great business for you.
I'll get more up on my Hebrew, and then I'll start with that.
Okay, so you also are a government student. How did you choose this path, and how do you see yourself working in, I don't know, maybe Israeli politics or something like that?
So I am a government student, and I'm in the media focus cluster, actually. So I share a few second year and third year communications courses the past couple of years, which have been very interesting and enlightening. But I've been into politics since I've been about 14, 13, 15, around that time, because Seattle started to get really crazy politically. The Jewish cemetery, the local politicians weren't caring because homeless people were sort of going into the cemetery and doing things at a cemetery, which aren't meant to be done in a cemetery, to put it lightly. And we had to do things for ourselves. Like, my father started to get into politics because of it, and he ran for city council. And thank God he lost, actually, because during 2020, we had all the riots and everything. And I've just been growing up in a situation my entire life since I've been about 12, 13, around then, where things have been very politically charged. You know, 2016 was when Trump got elected. And since then, everything has become about politics. I wish it wasn't. I wish I could have come to Reichman because my second choice was communications, mm-hmm. right? I'm a communication student at heart, but, you know, a government layer over top of that. But I really wish, you know, I didn't have to be so involved in politics. But now that I'm in this world, I really do enjoy it. So I figured might as well go to a good school. Mm-hmm. Where I can learn politics, not like political science, because I know schools like Bar-Ilan or Tel Aviv University teach more political science, which is more law-focused, more focused on the legal aspects of politics. I'm more focused on the media side of it. I want to know how a presidential campaign operates and how it works and how it portrays the media. Stuff like that is far more what I'm interested in. So I figured, come here, get a degree in government, do some communication stuff also. It's why I work here at Audioversity as well in mm-hmm. my spare time. And then afterwards, I hope to go into something like, you know, when I draft into the Army, Dover Tzahal, maybe, or Kishrei Chutz, and afterwards maybe go work in political commentary or something like that. I don't want to be a politician. I'm not a fan of politicians.
Okay, interesting. And a not planned question. How do you think, as an American that lives in Israel, Israeli media works for, you know, the Israeli propaganda, you know, to the world? Mm-hmm.
I think, funnily enough, I think Israeli media is very, coming from my perspective in the States, where they talk about left-wing and right-wing media, Fox News versus CNN, Israeli media is very balanced. Mm. Channels like Kesha 12 or I-24, whatever, always present a very fact-based view, and they make it clear when they're doing opinion, when they're talking about things which are, this is my opinion versus what the actual fact is. They're always very clear. When I want to no information, for example, about the current stuff going on with the government, with Bibi or whoever he's firing that day, I always go to a place like the Jerusalem Post or the Times of Israel or even Haaretz if I want to read, you know, that side of things, because to me, getting all the knowledge possible so I can formulate my best opinion, Israeli media is actually quite good at being very objective and very fact-based. Now, it's not without its faults. Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect. But I think at the end of the day, they are a lot better at being objective than American media is.
Okay. And in the international aspect, do you think we are strong enough to...
I mean, we've talked about this in class before, yes. In our public diplomacy classes, where I think Israel's, I won't say failure, because we do have a lot of success on some levels. For example, with the evangelical community in the United States, we have a lot of success. But I think Israel could really do better by bringing in faces that people know from the States, bringing in influencers or content creators, Jewish, not Jewish, whatever it may be, to be the face of that, to portray to the international media. Because sometimes we come across very sort of like a bunker, very, you know, tight and not very appealing to look at, versus like a very nicely painted house, right? That's something you actually want to look at. You don't want to look at a stone cold gray bunker. If we could start going more towards the house in terms of visual aesthetics, in terms of how we're portraying ourselves to the world, I think that could work a lot better.
Actually, one of the best influencer like promoting Israel, the ones I prefer are Americans when they go out on the city and ask questions like, mm-hmm. "Are you like maybe a gay
like queer for Palestine?"
Queer
person.
For Palestine, exactly. They ask like, "Are you pro Israel or Palestine?" They mm-hmm. say Palestine. So the queer person answer, you know, I would be killed, I would go to prison. So those are, for me, the best way to mm-hmm. show what Israel is about to the world. And in America, they do it great.
Yeah.
So you also told me you do Jewish advocacy mm-hmm. on social media. What inspired you to start? And have you faced any online maybe challenges or, you know, person commenting and...
So that's definitely, yes, I'll say that. But I got into it about 4 years ago. Around, my aunt is big on TikTok. She has a lot of Jewish content and a lot of very Jewish stuff, and also advocating for Israel. My cousin worked for STEM with us for a long time, and now she works at the Jerusalem Education Institute. So I've always been surrounded by people who have been very advocating for Israel, who've been all about showing what the Jewish community is really like and how amazing it is and everything. So I started getting into it, doing TikTok, doing Instagram. Instagram really picked up after the war started. Mm-hmm. You know, I had some followers and stuff before that, but now it's really picking up. And obviously, I get, you know, hate comments and the DMs and stuff. It's a very creative one sometimes, so where I can't help but go, no, that's not bad. Like, that's I can't help but admire the work you actually put into this. But then I also think you took 2 hours to write that, because I saw that you were typing, because I can see that when you wrote your first message that said Free Palestine, and then you followed it up. That took a while. But these people put in so much time and so much effort to hate on somebody that they're never going to meet, that they have no chance of meeting, that I live across the planet from them, and most of them have never even been here. Most of them still live in their parents' basements back in the States, because that's who a lot of these people are. They're on their parents' money, and they live at home, and they don't know any better, because all they've been told, and this is why it comes back down to education, because education is what's important in terms of ensuring that people don't think dumb, aren't stupid, aren't ignorant of the facts, is education. But these people aren't educated properly. They're only taught what's taught in public high schools or in these awful universities like Columbia and stuff, which has been just teaching insane things. You can see some of their lectures. They've posted them online. These people are insane. They post them online and they're acting like, we didn't do that. It just really comes down to education and making sure people know better than to say things like that. So that's what results in so many of the DMs I, as well as hundreds of other Jewish creators, get.
You know what's really, really interesting? Sometimes when people talk about celebrities, this celebrity didn't talk enough, this didn't take this part. For example, I'm a big fan of Harry Styles. Okay, everybody knows that. And he never talked about the war. Mm-hmm. And of course, I would want for him to say, you know, that he's pro-Israel. But at the same time, I know that he doesn't know enough, that he's... He didn't study this. He's never been here and he's never been there. So I would prefer for him to be silent than speak...
And say something I disagree
with. Yes. Like, also, to speak shtuyot, let's be honest.
Exactly. Like, everybody knows I'm a big Taylor Swift fan. Mm-hmm. So I'm just glad she hasn't said anything, because I know she can be political. She has been political in the past. So I'm just glad she hasn't said anything. Because, again, like you said, I would rather not know and just assume, oh, well, she doesn't have an opinion or she doesn't know enough, than to know that she supports literal terrorists. I would rather not know anything.
Nahon, let's not know.
Let's not go further into that.
Okay. Did you make any Israeli friends, or the cultural aspects sometimes makes like this type of thing difficult, you know?
I would definitely say, because I'm in Reichman, because we're in Reichman, we're in a very unique situation, because we have the international school and the Israeli school, but there are international students in the Israeli school and there are Israeli students in the international school. I mean, our class alone, we have five or six Israelis, people who've been here for an incredibly long time, or were born here. So yeah, I definitely have Israeli friends, and they're very helpful for me understanding the system here and really integrating myself into the culture. And I look forward to making more of them as I go along, once I actually start living in an apartment off campus, because right now I live in the dorms. So once I get off campus and really into Israeli society, I look forward to actually putting myself there.
It's the best when all the cultures get
come
mixed.
Together.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is what's great about this school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's one, maybe, let's say, Israeli food, or maybe a snack that America is missing on? Let's not say bamba or shawarma. Mm-hmm.
Right, nothing too basic. That's a really good question, because I think Americans could stand with a lot of, like, we have really good food in America, I will say, and America is becoming a lot better at getting more cultural food, I think, especially since newer waves of immigration and stuff coming to the States, and same with Israel, where Israel's also getting really, like, there's new Asian restaurants every week here. We have one open up behind campus. It's delicious. That's a really good question. I have to think on that. Israel's really good chocolate, I will say. Most Israeli chocolate, I think the States, because all we have in the States is, like, Snickers and Hershey and Kit Kats and stuff. Very basic chocolate, where it's all kind of blends together. Same, Israel's chocolate game is unique and vast and different, I think. Bringing that over to the States would be very, very helpful.
A good investment. We can think about that for the future.
Just call it Israeli chocolate. Pitch it to the States. Boom. $1 billion.
I have a stupid question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. What do you think about Israeli, or the world in general, mm-hmm. always saying that Americans are dumb, like stupid?
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as stupid questions. Okay. Only stupid answers is what my aunt says to me a lot. But what they say we're dumb a lot, and I think it's because most of the Americans they see when they're scrolling through TikTok or Instagram or whatever, the people who get approached on the street, like we were talking about earlier, aren't exactly the brightest, shall we put it lightly. There are people who study BS degrees in college or haven't even gone to college who can't even point to where Germany or Israel is on a map or Russia. Like, they can't even point to back when the Russia-Ukraine conflict started, for example, they were going around with a map and asking people, where are Russia and Ukraine? Most people couldn't point to where they are. They could point to where Russia is, but they point, like, way, way off. Nobody could place where Ukraine is. I think the concept comes from a very small minority of Americans. Mm-hmm. Most Americans are actually quite educated. We're a very educated population. Now, it doesn't exactly reflect statistically because our education ranks very low on the world scale. Not that low, but pretty low.
But you also have one, like, university, like, the top of the world. Everyone wants to go study, like, at Harvard
exactly.
or whatever.
And I think it's starting to be changed a little bit. But some Instagram, like Olim in Tel Aviv. I love Olim in Tel Aviv, mm-hmm. but they do a lot of dunking on Americans.
For this, I asked this question because mm-hmm. They always do videos about like Americans and Israeli and Israeli girls and Israeli. Like, yeah. So I was thinking about that when I asked the question. If you could bring one thing from Seattle to Israel, what would it be?
Well, other than Starbucks, because we went over that already. I would like if it rained more here, just the Seattle rain and vibe. And if you've seen Twilight or if you've seen any movie set in Seattle, then you know what I'm talking about. Sorry, if it's just raining constantly, I really enjoy that. But other than weather, because you can't really change weather, I'd bring a Costco. I'd really like a Costco in Israel. We also invented Costco. Funnily enough, the first Costco opened up in Seattle. I would like Costco. It's like Osherad, but like 100 times better and cheaper. Mm-hmm.
And also, okay, I also said it in my last episode that I'm flying to America in 1 week and a half. Mm-hmm. I'm going to New York. And me and my friend already did a list. We are going to Walmart. We are going to, like, there are things in America, because it's a really big, big country. Mm-hmm. They are way bigger. You have a lot of, like, brands and, I don't know, foods that you can't find anywhere else. Also, I think that's the strongest thing you have, that the quantity of things.
I think sometimes the quantity negates where in Israel it's a bit simpler, where I kind of enjoy not having to have too many options to choose from. Where in the States, you're like, what do I choose? Like, do I do Nike? Do I do, like, if I'm choosing shoes, Nike, Adidas, Converse, you have all these options. Israel, it's like, yeah, what's on the shelf is what's on the shelf. You don't have any other options. There's not that many other stores. So you get what you get. When you go to the States, recommend going to Trader Joe's, obviously. Mm-hmm. They have these, like, spicy lime chips. They're bright red. The bag is, like, green and red. They're delicious. They're
okay.
So
tell
good.
Me the name after. I'm going to
I will 100%
it
send it to you.
Last question, and then we have a little game. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite Israeli word?
My favorite Israeli word.
Hebrew word.
Hebrew word. Well, funnily enough, I really like this sort of sound. This is going to sound weird, but hear me out. Like, the sounds Israelis make when, like, they talk in sentences. So sometimes you have the, like, they do the tick, yes. And I start incorporating that. And they also go, like, like, they'll just say, like, whenever that happens. But in terms of word, I think the word I find funniest is melafafon.
Melafafon.
Just,
okay.
It just rolls off the tongue, and it's funny. I'm learning more Hebrew, and I'm sure as I go, I'll, you know, pick up a new word and say, oh, that new word's pretty funny. But I like melafafon. It just sounds funny.
There are very interesting Hebrew words. For example, I like the word buba. I don't know why. I really like it. I never use it,
right.
But it's funny to hear it. But no, I actually really enjoy talking in Hebrew. I don't know why. Everyone says it's like a hard language, like Russian. It's not very, you know, sexy or I don't know what,
yeah.
Like Italian. But I don't know. It just, when I speak it, it's very, I know, it goes with the flow. I don't know how to explain it.
To me, Hebrew is the, pardon my French, but Hebrew is the sexiest language by far.
Oh,
like, to me, but that's just, might just
personal,
because I'm Jewish,
personal,
but it's
really
personal
like
to
Spanish,
every person. Some people really like Portuguese, some people really like Indian, some people like Mandarin. Like, it's different for every person. To me, Hebrew is a beautiful language, and I want to learn it better.
Okay, we're going to do a little game. I'm going to tell you words, and you tell me if it's better in America or in Israel.
Okay.
Food.
Israel.
People.
America.
Okay, school, like universities.
Because of anti-Semitism, Israel.
Mm. Parties.
Israel.
Okay.
Israel, just Freaky. Because we have more parties here.
Fashion.
America.
Music.
Israel.
Security.
Israel.
Okay, we have that.
I think in terms of like personal security, especially like in America, you can kind of, you could just hop on a bus wherever, and you could, or you could just hop on a train wherever. There's not really, especially like post 9/11, there's more security in places. But in Israel, when I go to, you know, the train station, Herzliya, or I even just want to get on the bus, there's always somebody with a gun, and there's security guards, there's metal detectors at the train station. It's a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Despite what people see on the news, I've always felt safer here than I have in the States.
I agree. So, well, thank you, Jonah, for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. You do really speak very fast. I like it.
I'm trying to slow down because some people have trouble understanding here.
On podcasts, sometimes I have people that come here and say, I don't know what. And then for the editing, it's the worst.
It's awful.
So you are great.
I try and be easy. Usually I'm not on this side. Usually I'm not the guest. Usually I'm the host. So I always try and make it easy on myself when I'm editing. But so when I do go on other people's podcasts, I try and make it easy on them too. Because I know I don't want them to spend 2 hours editing the podcast. Let them spend 5 minutes, you know?
I know. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until the next episode, I'm Yael Di Porto. You are listening to Me Dabrim Prima Lia. Ciao!
כל האוניברסיטה, מרכז האודיו של אוניברסיטת רייכמן.